You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
Well, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? I mean, these things are usually on the street. A beard. I think you're tuning it.
Hey, vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who, a fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of the Doctor Who universe. Hold tight. You never know where the TARDIS is going next.
Laugh hard.
Run fast.
Be kind. Doctor, I let you go.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station Who podcast. That's right, folks, we are back and we are going back to the third Doctor's era. We are going to be looking at Death to the Daleks, and it's going to be interesting. This was the first time I've actually watched this one. So
really?
Yes, it is. So you just heard Tom of the Geekly Oddcast is here. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you. Hello, everyone.
You were supposed to be with us a few weeks ago, but you actually mysteriously got sick right before the show.
I did. Migraine and all that fun.
Yuck. So we decided, let's bring him back. And he decided to pick a story from the Third Doctor's era. Why did you pick this one?
I actually really like Jon Pertwee, especially from the old Doctor's perspective. He's really the Doctor of action. He's kind of your James Bond Doctor with all the gadgets and the judo chops. And I really kind of enjoy that. And there's something fun about a man running around in crushed velvet and kicking ass.
I could totally see that. You know, that's a good way to put it. And, you know, we'll get all back into that. And thank you so much for coming back with us this time.
Of course.
And it, working in the shadows, I think, is your brother.
Well, indeed.
Hey, David.
How's it going?
Good
to be back.
Yeah, you know, we were going to just talk to your brother, but he said, you know, David wants to be here too. And they said he's hiding in the corner of the station.
Like, I never left.
Exactly. Well, you know, you both have parts of the geek seat still attached to you, so it's okay.
Oh. Is that a
wondering what that was?
Exactly. It's kind of like that little ankle bracelet thing, but, you know, it's stuck somewhere else. But we won't go into that on the show.
It's like 70s vinyl seating.
Exactly.
Just never.
Exactly. You slide into it and you just never leaves you. We also have our series regulars with us. Of course, let's welcome Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How you doing this week, sir?
I am doing great. This is good. It's good to have the brothers back, of course. And Third Doctor. It's been a while. So, you know, I know we did a lot of Third Doctor. It seems like we did a lot of Third Doctor last year. So, and not that I got tired of it, but it was just kind of like we needed a break. And now, you know, it seems like it's been a while. So it feels I went into this going, okay, I'm ready for some Third Doctor.
Well, you just got excited because I told you Sarah Jane is in a bathing suit in this one.
Oh, look, I don't care what she's wearing. I love me some Elizabeth Sladen, so I ain't going to lie.
Yeah, it was pretty darn awesome. And of course, you heard her just a second ago. Mary Ogle's with us.
Hi, everybody. It's great to be here.
Sounds like we just got a full house tonight. It's awesome.
It is awesome.
And of course, it's awesome that we want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com. We definitely want to hear you. And if you want to call us, you can definitely do that at 404-963-9057. Shows brought to you by the ESO Network Patreon, where you can help support the station. And, you know, we've got a few cons coming up, and we're going to talk about one of them in a few minutes. And we are, you know, going to be posting some of our panels up on the Patreon, and some of the other ESO Network shows have already been posting bonus material. Earth Station One has, the Caster Quest has, Dr. Geek is coming up with one, Transmissions from Atlantis, you know, all these different shows have been doing it. Even the Flopcast has done a special episode. So, you know, and that you can only hear that up on Patreon. So why not join the crew and join up in there, and it helps support the station. It's pretty darn awesome. Donations start at $1 a month. $1. You can't even buy a cup of coffee for that anymore. So, you know, even McDonald's is $1.50 for their coffee. So, you know, and that's McDonald's coffee, but we're not even going to go there. But it's just, it's interesting, you know, there you have three different rates. We have $1, we have $5, and we have $10. And the $10 folks are going to actually start getting some really special stuff coming very soon. So, you know, join in, become a patron, and join our ESO Patreon, www.patreon.com/ESO Network. Doesn't get much easier than that, folks. All right, let's get started with this week's rants and raves. Still not really a ton of Doctor Who news. And so they're keeping pretty quiet on a lot of the taping, who's appearing. Didn't they just announce that, who was his name? Alan Cummings. Alan Cummings, yes, is going to be on Doctor Who in this next season. And he's going to be playing a historical character.
Yes, he announced it, even though I'm not sure he was supposed to.
I think he's playing Henry V, I think. If I remember correctly.
To be honest, I do not remember.
But yeah.
It was a historical figure.
Yep. And it's interesting because I always could see him as a doctor, especially when he was younger. And not that he's that
definitely.
Old now.
He has that kind of quirky vibe about him.
Exactly. Even in real life, he has that quirky vibe.
Yes.
And I thought he would have been a great, great fit to be a doctor. But it's good to see him actually appearing on Doctor Who. So you'll definitely see that. And, you know, there's tons of rumors going around on who else is going to be appearing in this season, but you know, no confirmation. So we're not really going to talk about it. I think that's fair. We are very proud to announce that we are going to be returning to Concaster Burris. That's right, for 2018, Earth Station Who is going to be one of the official podcasts of Concaster Burris.
Yay! Now,
so we are going to be there. We'll have a table set up in the Artist Alley area. And so, you know, you'll be able to stop by, talk to us, and we'll probably be recording a couple sessions because we found out that we are going to be doing the panels on Sunday interviewing the two main guests. And that, of course, I'm very happy to announce is we're going to be speaking with Mark Shepard, Kenton Everett Delaware III. And we are also going to be talking to Catherine Stewart, who is basically Jenny, you know, which is pretty darn awesome. One of the Castronavis gang. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, those are great guests. I'm really looking forward to talking with them. And this gets to be my first time at Con K, so I'm very excited about it.
Well, that was the other news we were going to just announce. Thanks, Mary. You just.
And that was it.
Thanks, folks. Good night, everybody.
That's well, right. I mean, you know, it doesn't get any better than that. So
exactly.
What's the point of continuing with the episode?
Mary Ogle is actually going to be appearing with Earth Station Who for one of the first official times outside of DragonCon.
Yay!
So it's going to be official. And so I'm very happy to announce that. And so all three of us will be there, and it'll be a great time talking to everybody. So it should be a lot of fun, and it's going to be great doing the interviews. We had a great time last year when we got to talk to Gareth, we got to talk to Peter Davison, and we got to talk to Nev. It was awesome. And you can find those all back on, you know, if you go into your iTunes or Stitcher Radio or go on the ESO Network website, just search for the Earth Station Who specials. We did those last year. It was awesome. And thank you to Matthew and all the people at Con K for inviting us back. We do appreciate it. It's one of our favorite cons to go to. And, you know, we just have a blast.
Absolutely.
And I can also officially say that we also, of course, everyone knows we're going to be at Wholanta coming up at the beginning of May. And we'll have a panel there. We're going to continue with our Stephen Moffat talk. So, oh boy, we get to do even more Moffat talking.
And we get to do it in front of a live studio audience.
Exactly.
But yes, a live audience. So, yes. So if you want to, if you have something on your mind to say about Stephen Moffat, well.
Now's your chance.
yes. We've got a microphone for you.
Exactly. We're going to be talking to everybody about it. And we got a lot of guests already started line up for that, who, you know, friends of the show and people we know. And it's going to just be a lot of fun getting together and just talking all about the Stephen Moffat era, continuing on it. We could almost do that for Dragon Con. There's so much stuff we could talk about. The series continues, right? The Moffat era.
It's all Moffat all the time.
I don't know if we'll go do that. But, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun. Hulanta, of course, has been very gracious to Earth Station Who. We've been with them. God, how many times have we been, Mike? Is this probably about our sixth or seventh time?
Yeah, I think, well, you actually went, but started going to the convention before I did. So I always had a conflict with it, with some other shows. So, yeah, it's been a great relationship that we've had with them over the years.
Mm-hmm. And probably our next episode, we'll have Alan up on the show to help promote and, you know, talk about the con. So it should be a lot of fun.
It's coming up.
Exactly. It's less than a month away, folks, and it's going to be great. So, Earth Station Who, we're going to be at cons. Come visit us. We'd love to see you guys and talk. Anytime we get to talk about Doctor Who is always a blast. So it should be a lot of cool stuff to do. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment. And we're going to be talking about Death to the Daleks.
Death Star plans are not in the main computer.
Where are those transmissions you intercepted, including those of the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast? I need my weekly dose of sci-fi news with movie and TV reviews and commentary.
We intercepted those transmissions! This is a consular ship!
If this is a consular ship, where is the ambassador?
Sorry, I was indisposed.
I will give it a moment to air out, if you know what I mean.
Who needs the ambassador? I thought I heard someone call out for me. What in the bloody hell did you do to Ramus? Speak up. Which one of those chess buttons calls your supervisor, you imbecile?
Geez, mister. Honestly, he was, like that when we got here. Right, fellas?
Mister, I am an ambassador.
Let me see your identification.
Shut it, Bob. You are as clumsy as you are stupid. He doesn't have to show you your ID.
We don't need to see his identification.
You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Libsyn.com, and Stitcher Radio. The Monster Sci-Fi Show is part of the ESO Network. It's sci-fi. From a certain point of view.
Does this make my casing look big?
And we are recording.
I can't believe you worked before. That's excellent stinger material.
No, trust me, it'll be there. You have no worries there. All right, 3, 2. Welcome back. We are going back to the 11th season of Doctor Who. We are going back to February 1974, and we are going to be looking at Death to the Daleks. This is Pertwee's final season, and he's joined by companion Sarah Jane Smith. And it is, yes, I could get the sighs out now, Mike.
Sarah
was my first companion, and you know, it was funny, somebody on Facebook recently was like, who was your crush growing up? And I put Sarah Jane Smith, because you know, she is adorable, and she was my first Doctor Who companion, and it was just awesome. And it's neat because this is, like I mentioned at the earlier part of the show, this is the first time I've actually seen this one. I've never seen it before. So it was neat to watch it all for the first time. And as I started watching, it's like, oh my God, please don't let this be 6 episodes.
They were having a hard enough time with 4.
Yeah, they were. So
well, I can tell you, I can tell you this was not the first time I saw it, but when I was watching the first episode, I was convinced it was, because I didn't remember any of the stuff that happened early on in the story, only the stuff that came later.
Oh, yeah, gotcha. I've seen this one before, and I have to say I'm the same boat. I was like, I'm watching this going, I've seen this before. I know I have, and at the same time, like, I don't remember any of this. It has been a while. This is probably one of the earlier ones that David showed me way back in the day.
It was interesting for me because some of it seemed very familiar, and then I realized I had read the Target novelization back in college, and because I had all of them back then. And so that's why I was like, okay, this makes more sense, why I recognize it.
Was that Terrence Dix?
Yep.
Who did the novelization?
Oh, Terrence wrote a lot better than this actually was.
I was just going to say that it was probably a lot better writing than the script.
Yeah, and you got to imagine the characters in your head instead of the unfortunate makeup jobs that we got for the aliens, the inhabitants of this fair world.
You mean the dehydrated Sontarans?
Or the really bad cut to John Pertwee's stunt double at the very first episode.
That was bad.
I was like, wait a minute, I've never noticed this before. Oh man, this is really bad.
And there was a couple scenes with the Daleks where you actually saw the people inside of them because they were outside and you could see through the screens. I don't know if anybody noticed those.
I didn't notice that. But,
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, I watched it on BritBox, and I will say the picture quality was really, really good. So I was really impressed by that. But look, there's a lot that I like about this story that I liked about it. And, you know, I don't want to, like, just dump on it because I think there was a lot of really cool stuff here. I like some of the ideas behind it. I like the I think it's maybe one of my favorite uses of a quarry because it really like, you know, way too many times. I mean, we see it all through Tom's run and going forward, like, it's just, okay, they're in a quarry again. And I don't know if this was one of the first times they went into a quarry, but it really felt like they had an alien, really harsh, hostile environment vibe to it, especially in the beginning when it was nighttime shots. I really thought it was really inventive, and I, you know, and some of the daytime shots, when it became day and the doctors wandering around and everything like that, it kind of felt like I was watching, like, you know, an early version of Star Wars or something with the droids going through and getting captured by Jawas. But I really enjoyed that part of it, the outside elements.
I can tell you during those initial nighttime shots, the only thing I could think of were those immortal words from MST3K. They chose the perfect day to shoot a night scene.
Well, part of the reason the scenes in the first, especially the first episode, are also so grainy is that was a restore. This was one of the first episode was one of the last of the storylines that was destroyed.
Yeah, it's the last to have its original masters wiped.
Yeah. Exactly. So you're not going off the originals. You're going off of copies of a copy on this. So we're lucky to be able to see this. And
I did
so,
not know that. Yeah.
So it's pretty interesting. So that, you know, kind of has some infamy to it. So the Doctor and Sarah, basically the TARDIS crash lands. And, you know, it used to do that all the time anyway back then. You know,
it does it a lot in New Who too, actually.
Yeah. It's not a really hard crash landing though. It's kind of more like a thump. It's one of the few times it's completely out of power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, and I really, what I liked about that was that, you know, right there. And I know it's been mentioned earlier than this, but I always love it when the Doctor talks about how the TARDIS is a living thing. Like he's concerned because it's not just a machine. It's not just his ship that's dying, or that, you know, literally it's, but it's a living entity. It's a companion to him, if you will. It's a friend, like it's important to him, that, and it's dying. Like, he's like, this should not be happening. I like the bond that's there, and the implication that the TARDIS is just more, is more than a machine.
No, very no, much I, so.
Yeah, I enjoyed that as well. It's kind of nice because it, you know, especially, you know, in more recent seasons, that become.
Yeah, it really plays out.
Yeah. It really plays out. Yeah.
Well, it was interesting too because, you know, the Doctor actually had to use the crank to open the TARDIS doors.
Yeah.
And how he made it look nice and easy to do. And then when Sarah was trying to do it, she was like struggling to, you know, turn the lever, you know. It's like, what?
Elizabeth was selling it, man.
Oh, she was, but come on, that's a little sexist right there. You know, because the Doctor is super strength or something.
Yeah, well, there's lots of sexism in these early episodes.
I was going to say, like, I'm sorry, that's like the least one. Like, if you're going to talk about like sexist stuff, even in this story, that's like way down on the list.
Oh no, if we're going to talk offensive things in Who, let's just jump forward a few seasons to Tom Baker, and I'm not even going to repeat it, but it took place in.
Thinking of the Talons. Yeah.
The Talons. And he makes a really nasty comment towards Chinese people. And it's just like, yes. Oh, dear.
Not that I think it's that they dwelled on it too much, but there was because they weren't even aware. I got a very colonialist bent from this particular episode, and not in a we're doing it deliberately sense, but in a we've kind of been doing this for so long that we're not even aware we're doing it.
Well, it's a very patronizing
it very sense. Much so, and a lot of the stuff that they do, they you know, it's commented a little bit that it's unethical, but no one really has a hard time profiting from that unethicalness. So there's I can't imagine this particular story playing out this way even 10 years later.
Well, there's definitely some underlying racism going on here. I mean, there's sexism too. It's very much a product of its time.
Yeah.
I do feel that it wasn't acceptable. Like, they never, like, the especially the feelings towards the inhabitants. The Exelons, if you will, like, I always felt like the ones who were disregarding them and treating them like crap were, it was wrong. I mean, it was clear that that was not okay behavior.
And at the same time, they had absolutely no problems profiting from what happened without even a consideration of that they should go back and make amends. Oh, well, we kind of used the native inhabitants to do all of our processing for us. We're going to run off with this and not really worry about.
Well, they did try to kill them. Like, they did legitimately try to sacrifice them with incense.
No. Yeah, but I would argue that storyline alone is colonialist and racist because of, you know, the whole stereotypical portrayal of quote unquote primitive natives and how they act and how, you know, of course there's no nuance to their culture. It's just they worship the city as a god and they sacrifice people, which I think is one of the problems in this story is that we do not get to really know the Exelons.
Well, and even if the High Priest and the Exelon and that group had been the only group, I would, you know, say, yeah, definitely it's there. But then you've got that alternative with Bilal and his people that they're really cool. Like, they're like, you know, they're in the know. They don't believe in that sort of, you know, worshiping in that, and they've trying to help out with the problem.
And they're really cool guys because they accept everything the Doctor says at complete face value without any questions of what does that even mean.
I really liked. I hated the makeup and all that. I mean, that was really awful. But the guy they got playing Bilal in particular was amazing. I thought he was a really great pantomimist. Like, his reactions, especially when the Doctor and he are going through the city with all the traps and everything, are just amazing. Like, he's not given much to work with, and that face doesn't move. Like, it just doesn't. And yet he's over, like, he's he's reacting really well. There's no doubt, like, the emotion that he has as a character. I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, well, I agree with you there. I mean, his body language was really mm-hmm. selling it. I mean, he's a very physical actor, and it worked out very well. I mean, I agree that Bilal was a very interesting character, even though he looked like a sleestack to me. It's almost to think of as, you know, I kept hearing the Land of the Lost theme in my head.
He looked like a sleestack that was bleached.
Yeah, that was burnt. Like he's well done.
A well done sleestack.
And he glowed in the dark.
And, you know, it's actually, it shows you how awesome Sarah Jane is, because she doesn't get to do a whole lot in this story. She there's some cringing and screaming, but she sells it every time. She sells it. I mean, she really lights up the screen every time we see her. And I could just sit there and watch Sarah Jane.
Yeah,
you know, wander around.
She's got chemistry, of course, with the doctor. I mean, Elizabeth has chemistry with John, no problem. They have a great rapport. She suffers from all the things that companions do because they have to, you know, they get in mm-hmm. trouble, they scream, they want doctor, doctor, that kind of thing. But I thought when it came down to it, at the time when she's, you know, about to be sacrificed, she's meeting her end pretty nobly. Like she's not just like crying and weeping and like, you know, carrying on. I thought she was pretty much always, it looked like she was always trying to think of how can I get out of this? What's going to happen? Not really depending on the doctor as much as other companions have in the past. And she does have like active things to do. And in fact, when the doctor and Bilal are going in the city, he's like, Sarah, I think you should stay here. And she's like, oh, come on. Like, you mean I can't go? You're trying to protect me? He's like, no, I've got something for you to do. And it was an actual mission that meant something. And she carried it off better than the doctor expected her to.
Oh, very much so. She literally, you know, sabotaged the Daleks.
Yeah.
And it was pretty darn awesome what they did.
Actually, her teaming up with, what was her name, Joel?
Yeah.
That's a really nice moment when they team up and they figure out what to do to switch the bags around.
Do you have mm-hmm. extra bags? Why, yes, we do. Just conveniently.
No, I've actually... For most of her run, I've enjoyed that she's been, at the time period, one of the more effective companions, or to state it, because it's just the way the show was written in the time period, especially, I mean, she's one of the more effective companions overall, but then far and above generally the female companions to come before, and then for a while later. I mean, I did like Leela a lot when we got to that point, but... Sarah Jane Smith was definitely a shift in companions.
Especially when you consider, like, right before her was Joe Grant, which I'm sorry, but, you know, Joe has very few, I love her, but as an actress and everything, but she has very few redeeming qualities as a companion, in my opinion.
Yeah, I like her much better as Iris Wildthyme.
Yeah. I mean... Sarah Jane has some agency, you know. She is her own being. She's not just an attachment to the doctor.
And I actually have to wonder how much of that comes from the fact that that she was doing things like taking that death scene, like, with a lot of panache and bravery and all of that, and how much direction there was that she's the kind of character who should do this, and how much it was Elizabeth Sladen going, no, this is the kind of way I'm going to portray her doing this, and if that contributed a lot. Because I suspect, based on this episode, that it was not written for her to be that strong a character that early on in the episode.
No, I think this is only her third storyline.
I was going to say, this is like, one of her very early ones. Yeah. And it's so amazing how well defined she is, even at this early stage.
Yeah. And early on, writing wise, I sort of got the impression that it was supposed to be a kind of an arc culminating in her coming up with doing something, you know, useful. And she actually played it more like, no, this is the character that would always be looking for a way to do something useful. And I think that change is really shows here.
Well, a little bit, but also remember the storyline before this, she was fairly strong also because it was Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she was pretty rocking in that too.
Yeah.
So it was pretty, it was neat to see. And I think, well, Sarah's just a great character. Just in
she
general.
Really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I could keep gushing on her for a long time, but you know, obviously we've got, this is a Dalek story because we haven't even mentioned them yet. And it's Terry Nation. And of course, Terry does like throwing the Daleks in with, you know, natives and savages and all that kind of thing. I don't know why, but there's a lot of it from the very first, you know, Dalek story to now to later on. I mean, he just sort of likes that dichotomy, maybe?
I guess. I think
he just has no imagination, and he only had one storyline in him.
That's fair because, you know, I mean, they're variations on a theme, right? And part of him is probably like, well, why knock what's working? But the other part is like, I don't know if he ever really takes big chances, you know, when he's writing those Dalek stories.
I don't think he does.
I think, well, and then another problem is it's called Death to the Daleks.
But
and the problem is, and so your cliffhanger for the first episode is the Daleks arriving, which is a pretty, the Daleks haven't shown up. Daleks is in the name. I wonder who's going to show up in that trash can lid landing on the hill.
Who could it be?
And that's the other thing. That was a waste bin lid that somebody, like, you know, cheesed up a little bit more landing on a blue screen. And I'm just like,
yeah.
Somebody was like, we need a ship.
Don't forget to put a door on it.
Yeah, that was like every 50s sci-fi movie spaceship. It was basically the pie plate with the cup on top.
Exactly.
Well, and even in new Doctor Who, the Dalek ships haven't gotten much better.
But the thing with this story is it wasn't supposed to have Daleks in it originally.
No, it wasn't.
No, they added the Daleks because Barry Letts basically wanted to cash in on the popularity.
Is this the first time the Third Doctor meets them?
I don't think so. I have to go back and check, but I thought he met them at least two times.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
No, you remember he met him with the Master teamed up with the Daleks. You remember in that that two-parter that we watched?
Right.
The Daleks were doing everything behind the scenes in the first one.
Because
the Doctor was put into the penal colony and everything. Mm-hmm. And the Daleks were actually, it's like Daleks' master plan, I think it was, or something like that.
I do always like to see when a new companion meets the Daleks for the first time and how the Doctor is really, like, you know, treats them as the threat that, you know, we know that they are. And the companion is like, what? I don't know what these are. You know, like, I do kind of like that. There wasn't a great moment here where they're introduced to Sarah Jane Smith, but I do kind of like the fact that every time, like when the Daleks do come out, of course, it's not a surprise. But yet, you know, like John sells it like, oh, my God, like this is, you know, now everything just went really horribly wrong.
Like, Go for it, sir. I was going to say, although it might have helped if the Daleks weren't always accompanied by this weird, sad clown music.
Oh, that music. That music! Oh, my God. Horrible. I was just going to ask if any of you guys had noticed how
bad
the music
awful.
Was.
Well, yes. Sarah, actually, when the Daleks landed, Sarah wasn't with them because she was being held by aliens because...
Right.
And it was just interesting because, you know, the Daleks came out and they had their guns, exterminate, exterminate. And it's like the Doctor saw nothing happen. He says, you're not so powerful now, are you?
Which, you know, I mean, look, it logically doesn't make any sense that their guns don't work and yet everything else does. Like, it just, yeah. And, you know, because there are people in there or whatever he said, there are beings in there. It's like
they're psychokinetic.
Psychokinetic. Yes. Yeah, that was.
Yeah, that was lame.
I have a quick question. So, you know, first episode, Sarah Jane's in the TARDIS. One of the Exelons is in there. She knocks him out, which is great. Like, you know, but
Girl power.
You know, fantastic. But no, more to the point, you know, do we just think at some point he woke up and walked away, or is he just wandering the TARDIS?
He's still wandering the TARDIS, even now.
He's chilling by the pool. She whaled him. I'm like, did she just kill him? Because she took like that, what was really like almost like a crowbar, like, you know, that wench or whatever that they used to open the doors, and she just wails on him, and I'm like, wow, did she just kill him? Like, I just, it's pretty brutal, I thought.
Yeah, for a kids show.
It's interesting though, because, you know, the characters are interesting, and there is some violence in this. The Daleks get basically, they get revolvers installed into them. They basically get guns.
Yeah. Well, in the very first scene, a guy gets shot with an arrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, whoa.
I mean, it's actually pretty brutal.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the whole scene that the aliens, you know, the natives of the planet are really bad shots at arrows and spears. You know, when the doctor and his, or they're surrounded by them, but no one gets hit except for the one guy. That's the red shirt of the group.
The stormtroopers of the Doctor Whovers.
What did you guys think of the city?
See, this is what, this to me is the biggest problem with this story. The thing that frustrated me the most, because I think the idea of a sentient city is awesome. That the city became alive and is basically trying to save itself. That's such an interesting idea, but it goes nowhere. I mean, even when the doctor breaks into the city, I kept waiting for the big scene where he's going to confront the city. You know, they're going to talk and they're going to say something. Nope.
Or at the very least, knowing the doctor, especially the doctor that we know now, they would have made a big deal about how the doctor would have been impressed by this city and hated to, like, you know, do any harm to it, because it is a, you know, a live entity, you know, like, and he would struggle with it. But this doctor has no compulsion about, like, no, I'm just going to, like, you know.
No, he just does brain surgery on it.
Yeah. I mean, until that, he really is very, very. Oh, yeah, that there's now only 699 wonders of the universe.
Exactly.
Yeah, oh, well. But you see, that would have been a great line, except it was meaningless because we never got to know the city. So
I agree. Well, I mean, as I said earlier, he's very much the James Bond of the doctors.
It's true.
And it really does kind of fit with, almost expect a nod and a wink towards the camera at some point, and you wouldn't be surprised.
Mm-hmm, exactly, holding a martini or something. It would have been actually pretty awesome to see that. It's interesting, though, because the doctor, like you said, you know, went through all these different traps that were set in the city to get to the brains of the city, and especially the one where he had to almost like play hopscotch across the little maze, the little design on the ground. That was, It was like, they just, the five doctors, they took that from this episode.
I really thought that was really suspenseful too, because when the Daleks are coming up behind him, I'm like, okay, how are the Daleks going to get by this, right? And they just shoot the floor, and they're like, or no, I like how the one Dalek lets the other one just get electrocuted, like, okay, and I'm just going to go around by. Like, it just, like, I thought it was really amusing and entertaining how the Daleks, like, kind of solve the mysteries as well. I did think that was pretty cool.
If I could do this in a sing-song voice, I'd do it, but I can't. Not this one. Is I almost expected in the middle of that scene to hear a whoa, 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 whoa.
It was kind of a Dalek double act, you know, going through there.
And I loved it after they were soliloquying, basically, after, ha ha ha, there is lightning. It would have killed a humanoid, but not our superior Dalek. You know, it's just like, oh,
yeah,
God.
They did develop monologue.
Exactly. Great. The Daleks are now monologuing.
And I think they use the expression superior Dalek technology multiple times during the episode, which makes it all the funnier when they downgraded their guns to be able to fire anything at all.
Yeah, actually, I thought that was hilarious when they were shooting the bullets.
So here's a quick question, because we brought it up earlier, and I'm trying to bring it back around, but I'm not necessarily willing to give Terry Nation this much credit, given the reason why the Daleks are actually here, and is that so you've got the Space Marines showing up there to mine this planet for what it's worth and make a ton of money off of it. Now,
with the most unfortunately named substance.
Yes. Yeah. But the goal is to try and help people and make money doing it at the same time. But the problem is you've got this, and they think of the Exelons as being, you know, really not worth their time and primitive and such as that. And you've got that very colonialist view there. And then you almost have the moment for, you know, a perfect, you know, foil, because the Daleks show up and they think everybody is beneath them. Everyone is primitive, and then it's worth just destroying and taking what they want. Now, do you think there was any of that there at all? Because I really didn't see it, or I think it would have made a much better episode if they'd been able to play off that even just a little bit.
If this was written by Robert Holmes, it would have been brilliant, but it was not. I mean, he was the script editor, but I mean, yeah, but you know,
all the pieces were there, but
yeah. Yeah, I think so. And that's probably what they were thinking, but I don't know if, you know, I do know. Knowing Terry Nation's writing going forward, I mean, they're very seldom the best episodes, you know. I mean, he's just not that great of a writer.
No, he's really not. I mean, he had sort of one good character idea, and then that was it.
And he came up with it at lunchtime. It's like, what could the villains be? Can you pass the salt, please?
Yeah. I mean, this is one of those kind of frustrating stories for me, that there's so many good elements here that are just dropped. You know, they just so many things to explore. I mean, it could have been a great story, but it just isn't. I mean, it's certainly not the worst I've ever seen. It was enjoyable to watch for the most part, though I do think the pacing was slow. It dragged, but then, you know, a lot of the older episodes do. But it wouldn't develop anything. It would just leave the ideas on the table rather than going anywhere with them. And I think, you know, that's too bad, because you could have really done something with them.
It could have been a contender.
No,
there was a lot of possibilities. I liked those, whatever those roots were, the things that were, you know, basically, those were awesome. When they came out of the water, it was pretty, pretty wicked. And
I really like the when it comes out of the water and it attacks the Exelon, you know, worker there. The only thing about it is it hits him and he's on fire and he's like screaming, and I'm like, you're in water. Just lay down.
I was doing the same thing. My sister and I are screaming at the TV. You're in water.
It's like, it's just lay down. And he finally does. I'm like, man, that took you a while.
And the music just didn't help any of this.
No.
You know?
Wow.
It was like, I don't know, did he not watch the episode while he was scoring it? Because it did not go.
No, they just, let's throw this one in there, you know? And it was just like, are you sure that you want it there? Just put it in. We're contracted. Come on. They paid for it already, you know?
I don't think the guy who's listed as doing, I looked him up, the guy who did the incidental music, Cary Blyton, I don't know that he did much else. On Doctor Who. Like, I think he was he did three stories, it says. He did Doctor Who and the Silurians, Death of the Daleks, and Revenge of the Cybermen. That was it. And he's most notably does a lot of kids television series music, which makes so much sense. He's best known for his song Bananas in Pajamas.
Suddenly it all comes clear.
Wow, that makes so much more sense now.
And the incidental music was performed for this Doctor Who episode was performed by the London Saxophone Quartet.
Wow.
Okay.
In pajamas. Yes.
Now I'm going to see Daleks in pajamas from this point on.
Oh, dear.
It'll be interesting, but it wasn't a bad story. It was, you know, it was neat because you had Pertwee's doctor so stuck on Earth for so many seasons. It was actually cool to see him on another planet.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I like that too. I mean, I when I think of John Pertwee's doctor, I always think of him with UNIT and on Earth, and that's what the image that first comes to mind. But the last couple seasons that he did, where he actually got to visit planet, I mean, he was so good at that too. But I must admit, it's not what I see first when I think of him.
No, it's always you think of the UNIT stories,
Brigadier, and all of that.
Yep,
exactly. Mm-hmm. So it was,
and I did think the cast of other characters I thought were really good. I mean, they all seemed to really fit their characters. So I once again give credit to the Doctor Who casting folks for putting in interesting character actors to play these parts, because some of them could be really stiff, and yet they don't. They make them more entertaining. I mean, I don't think there was nobody here. I mean, Jill was kind of cool, but there was nobody here that I would have been like, oh, I wish they had been a companion, except for maybe Bilal. For some reason, I just thought he was brilliant. Like, I just thought his pantomime and the way he acted underneath that horrible makeup and everything was just outstanding. It was inspired to me.
I could see that. It was interesting because you even had the, you know, redemption of Galloway, you know, who ended up blowing himself up and taking the Daleks mm-hmm. with him.
That's true. Yeah.
Because, yeah, so it was interesting.
I also noticed too that you mentioned that the Dalek voices were really bad. Well, I guess it's because it's not traditionally who we think of that does usually Dalek voices.
That's true.
So no. it's listed as Michael Wisher, who I don't think it does say he played Davros. He was the first actor to play Davros.
Well, that was
interesting.
The next season, actually.
That's the next Dalek story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. what a difference it makes.
Oh, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those Daleks are actually flipping scary.
Yeah, well, I think it's the first time in a while the Daleks have been truly menacing.
Because mm-hmm. in this one, they were not.
No.
No.
No, no, they were really comic relief.
Mm-hmm. So
I mean, even with the stinger from the first episode, which they kind of ruined, where the firing, you know, mechanism for their laser is just coming out and nothing's happening. And so it kind of ruins you think they're about to get shot and we go to, you know, cliffhanger, but nothing's happening. And you're like, wait, nothing's happening.
And it was funny when they kept on like trying to fire and it's just spitting out. I kept on going like the things you used to have as kids as a birthday party. You know. That's what it looked like. And it was just like, surprise, you're not going to die. Because, yeah, all of them were flinching when the Daleks were firing it. And that was a great cliffhanger.
And yeah. And I got to say that the Daleks overall plot was, it was actually less a Dalek plot and more of a master plot. You know, the whole idea of holding the galaxy hostage for the substance they really need.
Yes.
That's so much more the kind of thing the Master would do than the Daleks.
I kind of wonder if that was what the original story was written as, but Delgado died before the filming of the next season, of that season.
Oh, yeah. Possibility.
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I just don't see the Daleks doing the full ransom. Like, I feel like thinking, we have what you need to survive, and it'd be like, all right, we'll give you everything you ask for. Yeah, I'm not giving you this.
The Daleks are much more likely to just take it all and let everybody die and then move in.
Yeah, I mean, they would just level everybody, you know, raise the planet, kill everybody, take it over. Mm-hmm. I can't admit, they're not manipulative like that.
No, then they're not greedy. They wouldn't be taking something hostage like that. They wouldn't be like, we want money, we need it, you know, they don't care. That's not the Daleks. That's what threw me off on it.
Agreed. It is somewhat entertaining that the Daleks and humans are warring over this substance called Perineum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I can't believe that made it past all the censors. Yeah. The best part is when I was looking it up afterwards to check that I really was hearing it correctly, spelled differently. The best part is that in the description on the TARDIS Wikia, the Exelons used Perineum as a condiment.
Okay.
I bet they did.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
That made my night.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting, and you know, I don't know how quickly I'm going to go back and watch this one, but it was enjoyable. And Tom, thank you for suggesting it.
Of course.
So any last thoughts before we go ahead and rate this one? Wow. Don't everyone speak at once. All right, Tom, this is yours. 1 out of 5 TARDISes, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best.
Oh, I'm going to say probably about 3. It's not the worst episode I've ever seen, not by a long stretch, and it's not the best, but I enjoyed it. Agree with you. I'm not going to go back anytime soon, but you know, I enjoyed it.
Okay. David?
I'm going to go 3 as well. I probably would have in most circumstances dropped it back to a 2.5, but the a lot of the elements that didn't have to work did, like stuff like the really good pantomime and Sarah Jane being, you know, a much more stoic companion, and a lot of those incidental pieces helped to elevate it beyond what is fairly lackluster story overall. So yeah, 3.
Okay, awesome. Mary?
Well, I think I'm also going to give it a 3, mostly for Sarah Jane. But this story just frustrates the heck out of me because it could have been so much more than it was. And it actually is amazing to me that it was as enjoyable as it was because it really wasn't working at all in so many ways. But I think it's on the strength of the characters and really more not so much how the characters are written, but the actors who were acting the characters. Because they did bring them to life, and that is enjoyable to watch. So yeah, I think a 3.
That is cool, Mr. Mike.
3 for no. Actually, I'm going to give it a 3.5 because I just love Sarah Jane Smith that much. unfortunately, I can't give it a 4. I'm sorry, Sarah. I just can't. But 3.5, I'll go up for you, Elizabeth. I'll go to 3.5 for this.
Okay. I'm going to do a 3.25. The quarter is, you know, a 3 is being very generous, truthfully. The story wasn't all that great, but Pertwee was Pertwee in this one. He was awesome.
It's true.
You know, he always comes across as the smartest guy.
He does get to throw down, too.
Yeah. So oh, a couple times over.
Yeah,
I loved his bondage scene when he was all in chains and everything. And he then does the judo to get out and everything. It was awesome, and there was just some great scenes. And hey, it's Doctor Who in a gravel pit, you know, a quarry with Doctor Who. That's the 70s right there in a nutshell, and that's great.
I felt bad for the costume designer, the guy who had to keep track of all those and keep them clean. Like, just I remember looking at the doctor's pants, like it's like right at his shoes. I'm like, oh man, it's just completely covered. Mm-hmm.
But in the next scene, it's completely clear.
Exactly.
Given the, you know what's strange though, is given such a lackluster episode, given the way we just rated it, Nicholas Briggs, the current voice of the Daleks, it describes himself as the world's greatest Death to the Daleks fan, meaning this episode had a lot of influence on how he does their voices and characters.
That explains so, so much. Wow. Yeah, that says so much right there. We definitely want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com. You know, definitely tell us what you thought about this one. Did you like it? Did you not? Do you have a history with it? Please let us know. Let's thank our crew for joining us this week. Let's thank, of course, the Herman brothers. Tom, David, thank you so much.
Of course. Thanks for having us.
Glad we could come on.
Yes. Do you want to promote the Geekly Oddcast?
Yes, we have a new, well, when does this one come out?
Don't you come out on Thursdays?
Oh, so my new episode will be coming out tomorrow as well, as we pitch prequels nobody asked for
and nobody wanted.
Hey, even better. That sounds awesome. How can people find you?
You can find us on Podbean, iTunes. We're on Stitcher and Spotify now as well. You can find us at the Geekly Oddcast. And on there as well, you'll find Otter Worlds.
And where else?
Oh, we're also ESO Network.
Obviously. Hey!
And our blog is at thebrothersherman.dudeletter.com.
Hey, that's awesome. Definitely worth checking out, guys. I've been listening to them since even before they started joining the network. They've been great. And definitely worth listening to. They're fun, entertaining. I actually ride to work with them, so it's pretty awesome. So
good to hear.
So yeah, exactly. So it's great. And of course, let's thank our regulars for being here. Mike, thank you so much.
As always, it's my pleasure.
And Mary?
Thank you. It was a fun episode to talk about.
Any new artwork on the horizon since you are now an East Coaster?
Who has time? Yeah, I mean, I'm working on stuff, but I may actually put something up on the Earth Station Who Facebook page very soon.
Ooh. Wow, that's actually pretty darn awesome. Cool. And so, of course, the show is brought to you by the fine folks at the Patreon, at the ESO Network Patreon, to be official. And, you know, definitely join us, help support us. You know, you'll get rewarded for being a patron of the ESO Network. And, you know, folks, we're doing it. We're having a lot of fun with it. And it shows. And the network has just been growing. We have a new show coming online probably in the next couple days, and so, you know, we're going to continue to grow, and to grow further we need your support. And, you know, help with the Patreon, help with our Amazon link, or help with our TeePublic store. We have some great t-shirts up there. I actually just ordered my own Earth Station One t-shirt, so hey. And I've no Earth Station Who is also on its way, and hopefully gets here before Hulanta, so I can actually show, hey, look, this is our podcast. So probably be a good idea to do that. So you can find all of those links right on the ESO Network webpage, which is esonetwork.com. Just go right to the top. There's the Patreon link, the Amazon link, and the TeePublic. Each one of those helps support us. I know a lot of people have their Amazon links now, and people have their Patreons, but we're the ESO Network. We're your friends. Come on, help support us. You know, don't you want to do that? Come on. I could do guilt just as best as the rest of them. So it's a good thing. All right. Join us again next time when we are going to be actually looking at the Eighth Doctor. And you're going, what, Mike? You're going to review the movie again? No. We are going to actually look at a Big Finish audio of the Eighth Doctor. We are looking at Storm Warning, which is going to be actually introducing one of the Doctor's more famous companions for the Eighth Doctor era. But we'll have to wait till next week because, you know, it'll be fun to talk about, and it's going to be interesting to listen to. It's good. I've heard it already, and it's a lot of fun, and hopefully Mike and Mary will enjoy it also. But until then, my name is Mike Faber, and we will talk to you next time here on the Earth Station Who podcast. Peace, and we're done. Yay.
Woohoo.
Thank you, guys.
You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talent from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.